Canucks Central Thursday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, here in the Mobile Kintech studio at Rogers Arena. Canucks taking on the defending Stanley Cup champions, the Florida Panthers, in town to take on Rogers Arena. It's been a friendly confine for a lot of the visiting teams so far this year. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Kintech.net. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. That's how you get in a question or a comment for the show, should you be so inclined if you are listening live. We do appreciate them. And this hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. I'm going to make one prediction that I feel is guaranteed for tonight's set.
You think so?
Yeah. There will be a JT Miller chant before puck drop.
So what if he's okay before puck drop?
Yeah,
and if he's in the starting lineup,
yeah, if he's in the starting lineup for sure.
Okay,
but even otherwise, like I feel like the minute, okay, maybe before puck drop could be a bit ambitious. Mm. The minute he touches the ice, okay. Like his first shift, I don't know. I mean, we heard a JT Miller chant at Survivor Series here at Rogers Arena.
You think they just can't wait to do it, right?
They just like, can't wait.
They
want to support their guy.
Yeah, they love their guy.
Millsy or yeah. Billy, as he's also known on Hockey Reference.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust Hockey Reference.
Yeah, the nicknames, they just never.
I don't know who edits them, but you know, it's not always accurate. Neither are the pronunciations for the names. So be careful. Like Hockey Reference is also like very much like Wiki. Yep. You can't take it fully serious. It's not a legitimate source of information. It gives you some.
Yeah,
indication. Some stuff is true, but not necessarily all verified. But nonetheless, we don't need to dissect, you know, Hockey References credibility here when it comes to nicknames and pronunciations.
I know. I mean, I went to the NHL media site to see how they pronounced Di Giuseppe, and it was like Di Giuseppe.
Yes,
like, that's wrong.
It's just not right.
All right, let's get to the open here on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, the open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. Yes, announced this morning, JT Miller is returning to the Canucks lineup tonight. We'll dive into that and more as the show goes on. You'll also hear from JT Miller a little bit later on after he spoke with media this morning here at Rogers Arena. But one sentiment that continues to gain popularity, might be strong. The noise around how the head coach is handling this team under, I guess, the largest amount of adversity outside of the Stanley Cup playoffs that they faced last year, and how he's handled these absences, the injuries, how the team is progressing year over year. People got questions, and Rick Tocchet is starting to come under fire. Yes, last year's Jack Adams Award winner. Yes, a big factor in the culture change here in Vancouver, but coaches' honeymoon periods only last so long, and it seems like that is starting to turn here in Vancouver.
Well, at least for some part of the fan base, because we see it as far as interactions go. Like today, for instance, with the news that Erik Brännström wasn't going to play against the Panthers, something we mentioned on the show, or, you know, the last couple of days, that, hey, don't be surprised if Brännström doesn't play and Friedman comes back and plays tonight. And, you know, I don't see Brännström necessarily getting back in the lineup right away. And a lot of fans are questioning whether that's the right decision. Even a lot of media are wondering. And, you know, we talked about this. Would we take Brännström out? Probably not necessarily. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that he's been so good that it's not a debate or at least a legitimate option for the team to do so. But you see a lot of people wondering, can this coach teach offense? Can he get the best out of his star players? Is he making the right decision with the lineups? And because this year has been a lot more up and down, and to your point, the honeymoon period always wears off, right?
Yep.
You see some flaws. And to be honest, when you look at, you know, the job he did a really good job last year. when they got to the playoffs, he did a good job, generally speaking. But I'm sure he also learned some lessons, especially in that second round. Well, you know, we talked about how Knobloch, the head coach of the Oilers, ended up winning most strategic decisions, especially later on in the series, for instance. So no coach or no player and no manager is ever above reproach as far as critiquing and learning. And people make mistakes. And for instance, we talked to the front office. They were on such a heater with all the decisions they've made. Now a couple in Desharnais and Heinen don't look good, at least not in the moment. Maybe that changes. Not everybody's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, like, you are going to make mistakes. Things are going to happen. And I think there is less faith from a lot of people as far as the decisions the coach is making. I think he's in a pretty tough spot, given what's happened with the roster. I think he's done a great job with the team the last little bit. But that's not to say that there aren't things he can't improve. And there are questions we have about how the team is playing. It's getting very frustrating lately, and obviously no JT, not having Hronek, how little offense they're generating, how much of it's coming from the points, how little they're generating off the rush, too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, these are things you were trying to make and get better. How much of that can you hang on him with the way the season's gone with their absences? But I think it's a legitimate question for the rest of the season. Can they find answers?
So there was a quote from Rick Tocchet a couple of games ago. I guess it was the Columbus game where he said, I don't look at the shot clock. I just care about chances.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that's wrong necessarily.
I don't think that's necessarily wrong either. And, you know, when we look at chances, they've done pretty well in keeping those fairly even in most games, even through all the absences that they've had. You know, we spoke to Kevin Woodley yesterday, and I know there were some listeners to the program that really quibbled with the numbers that Kevin Woodley was portraying out there for us. 11th in high danger chances this season, the Canucks are, over the course of the entire season that they've played so far. They were 18th in rush chances, which isn't great. Like, it's not top of the league, but you know what? The Canucks were, I think, 31st last year in rush chances created by ClearSight Analytics, top of the market advanced metrics. So they have improved some of the things that they set out to improve. Lately, it's a lot harder to see. First with the JT Miller absence, and then with the Filip Hronek absence. And really, when you go into what the team has looked like without Filip Hronek, that's where the bigger red flags start to pop up. Since Hronek went out of the lineup, it is now 7 games that we've seen this team play without Hronek, and their shot attempts per 60 minutes have gone down below 50. 8 full shot attempts fewer per 60 minutes at 5-on-5 without Filip Hronek in the lineup. That might not sound like a lot to you, but generally, like, that's, what, 1.5 chances at least, 2 scoring chances that you're probably taking off the board as well over the course of a full 60 minutes at 5-on-5. 8 shots, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's still pretty significant for a team that was kind of a middle-of-the-road kind of scoring team, right? We don't expect the Canucks to shoot the lights out that much and be a top-tier offense, but you've taken an average offense, above-average offense, take it away Miller, then you take away Hronek, and you really start to see the effects. And the coaches are still trying to find workarounds for the absence of Filip Hronek, which has been the one that I feel has done the most damage to the way they want to play.
Yeah, you see how less effective they've been, and you outline as far as how much fewer the scoring chances are and how much fewer shots they're getting on the net. And I'm all for generating more quality looks than the other team, and I do think shooting volume can be overrated. We have to generate those looks. Last game, for instance,
they couldn't even generate shot attempts.
They had
right?
2 scoring chances, like 2 legitimate scoring chances, 5-on-5. They scored on one. That was Garland setting up Joshua going to the net. And the next one was Sasson being in alone and not being able to convert on his chance. And that's the only 2 high-quality scoring chances they had 5-on-5. How much of that is personnel? Having JT back is going to make a big difference, right? And I do think, generally speaking, one thing that I do believe in is you can try to play differently in the regular season, but once you get to the playoffs, the game, you have to understand how to play playoff hockey. It's different. You're not going to be able to play a looser hockey in the playoffs. It just changes. The game changes completely.
But that's the only way Rick Tocchet sort of designs this team, though.
It's how you play. Yeah, it's for the for their playing style to be consistent.
Yeah.
So they don't have to change and become something different in the playoffs. Of course, you tighten up. That's what happens in the postseason. But generally, they play the exact same style of hockey. That's what the Panthers did, and that's how they won the Stanley Cup. And that's how good teams are, and that's the way you have to approach things. So I completely understand how he's going about it, and I understand why it's frustrating that they generate so little offense. But I think the answer to creating more offense will come at the expense of their defensive game and their posture.
Yeah.
And I think if you do that, all you're doing is playing with, it's a house of cards that doesn't really extend beyond the playoffs.
Yeah.
If we get to a point in the season reach where they're fighting for their playoff lives and they can't generate chances,
yeah,
okay, maybe a conversation about, hey, maybe take some chances because you have to get into the playoffs. But as long as you're in the playoffs, I think you have to be true to how you want to play and what you want to be as a team.
And I don't think that they are they are not above criticism, because Rick Tocchet has a hand in some of the roster decisions that have been made. We've heard him speak of how much he likes to have size on the back end, and the Canucks have Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford have, I guess, agreed on that front, and they've tried to fill that void on the Canucks back end. They kept Myers around. They have Soucy, added Vincent Desharnais, which has been, not good signing to this point.
Yeah.
And if you're going to try and build a little bit better of an offense, an offense that can get out of its own end a little bit better, you know, Vincent Desharnais wasn't the answer on that front. We all had our concerns over the course of the summer. How are they going to overcome that? And they haven't found a way to, and we're almost 30 games into the season now. So that is something that they collectively, a problem that they collectively have contributed to in some form. I contrast it to Florida a little bit, hey, since they're in town. You know, Florida, we've talked about this before, like Florida kind of plays a style that Rick Tocchet, it feels, you know, philosophically similar to in his coaching style and how he wants to play, aggressive on the forecheck, hard to play against, physical, those kinds of things, those kind of traits. But they've gone a very different way of building out their back end than the Canucks have, where, you know, they bring in Nate Schmidt and guys like that, Boakvist on the back end. And I know it hasn't always worked completely, but just a different philosophy and making sure that they've got mobile enough players, decent enough puck movers on the back end that they can get the puck moving north and south to play the style that they want.
Yeah, and it's very clear that Canucks need to add another puck-moving defenseman, right? And in some way, somehow, they have to have one on the roster. And I understand the whole Brännström thing, but his game has fallen off. And where the Canucks have struggled, and the coach has spoken about a lot recently, is protecting the guts of the ice.
Yeah.
And that's where Derek Forbort coming back, I think, is going to help stabilize that. And it's his first game back. It might take a little while for him to really hit his stride and play it to the level that he's capable of defensively. We know there are some limitations with how he moves the puck, but I do think that he can provide something that Desharnais hasn't been able to provide 5-on-5, and even Brännström haven't been able to provide 5-on-5, and that's a steadier play in front of their own net and also their own zone defending. Plus, he's a really good PKer, and I think that takes away the reliance of having to have Desharnais in the lineup. And I do think maybe when Forbort gets a bit more comfortable, we do see Brännström get a chance next to him. I just think they feel right now, and it makes sense to me too, as much as I would still do it and still have Brännström in, but the thought of having Forbort play his first game next to somebody who's going to have to play his offside doesn't seem to be the best environment to put a guy in, right? And when there are some shortcomings defensively, and I know Brännström's played the right side and he can do so offensively, it's a completely different animal defensively.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the concern for the coaching staff is more than anything. And right now, because they've had trouble moving the puck out, shoring things up is a priority. So I understand why the coach is going about that. And I think as frustrating as that is, I think the most important thing is you have to be true to what you want to be as a team.
Yeah.
And if you don't do those things, then all you're doing is building a house of cards that's eventually going to fall down. And as much as it's hard to take this, you have to fight through it. And this is something we talked about in years past with different coaching, with different coaches and what the Canucks were trying to do, that they would try to change things up and do something different. And before you knew it, they lost the plot about what to be and where to go.
Yeah.
And if you understand what you are as a team consistently, you ride out the highs and the lows, but you'll still come out of it on the other side being the better hockey team. And considering where the Canucks are, I think that's the only way you can go about this season. That doesn't mean they're going to have a good year. That doesn't mean they're going to figure it out. But I think that's the only path forward, is to push through with what you believe is the best way for your team to play.
You have to stay true to what you want to be. And that simple, just trying to dive into the mindset of the coaching staff as to why Branstrom has been a scratch now for a second straight game, I understood it less against St. Louis than I do here today. But think about the game against St. Louis. Forbert's not quite ready to come back. So you want to keep Desharnais in for the penalty kill aspect. And you want to bring Friedman into the lineup, so Branstrom is the odd man out. Now here today, Rick Tocchet said, I want to keep the lefty-righty, so Forbert and Friedman. To me, the bigger sign here is Friedman over Desharnais. It's like as soon as they got Forbert, who's a great penalty killer, back in the lineup, Desharnais is, we don't have as much use for you now, is the way I see it. And that's the bigger question mark here for me. I think Branstrom's going to get back into the lineup. He's going to have to play the right side at some point here, because as long as Forbert's in and healthy enough to play, I think there's value to him as a player on the penalty kill and what he does defensively. This team needs a little bit more of that. But Desharnais hasn't played well enough to stay in the lineup. And eventually, Friedman is a guy who's like kind of a Band-Aid fix. He comes in and he does his thing, but eventually you're going to want something different. And that's where Branstrom is going to have to step in and take his spot, take his opportunity on the right side, playing next to a true stay-at-home defenseman in Derek Forbert. Stylistically and idyllically, it can fit together. It's going to depend on Branstrom's ability to play with a little bit more sharpness in his own end.
Yeah, and we know, as far as that goes, the last little bit, it has been a struggle. And I think when you look at the Canucks' D pairs in general, ever since Hronek's been out, nobody has really excelled except for Carson Soucy and Noah Juulsen. They've probably been the two most steady defensemen since then. Like, Branstrom, the last five games he's played, 4 goals against, 5-on-5, 2-4.
Yeah.
Right? Desharnais, 3 goals against, 3 goals for, 7 against, 5-on-5. You have to stem the bleeding. At some point, you get to a point where it's like, even if it's not necessarily significantly better, if you just get to a baseline of not hurting you, I think that's where you want to be at the very least, until guys get healthier. But, having JT back too and having more speed down the middle, I think is also going to help the team in a big way.
It was just one game that we saw with Forbert and Branstrom both in the lineup, because Forbert's only played 4 all season long. They did have the majority of shot attempts in just under 9 minutes played, 9-4, 7 against, and were actually 1 goal to the bad. So they gave up a goal and were not on the ice for 1-4. So that's something to keep in mind as time goes on here. So JT Miller comes back into the lineup. It's obviously a big boost to the group. If you didn't hear it, we'll play JT Miller's full media scrum from earlier today. He did not divulge the reasoning behind his absence and asked politely to the media there for the scrum to not ask too much about it, because he wouldn't be answering questions about it today. And that is his right, should he want to keep it private, and he does for the time being. But he comes back into the lineup. What Tocchet said, he's going to have to manage him and be calculated in his usage of JT Miller early on here, given he's been out of the lineup for 3 or 4 weeks. What do we expect out of JT Miller early on here?
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. But I do think you have to keep him off the PK for the most part. At the same time, he wins faceoffs. I think
who else would you want out there against a Barkov faceoff?
Yeah, and Pedersen's, last year obviously did better in the faceoff circle. It hasn't been as good this year, and it was, last game too, there was a couple of late faceoffs on the PK where
they started overtime
them.
With Suter and Garland because he had more confidence in Suter winning the faceoff.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of part of the issue. So I know he wants to ease him in, but is he going to be able to resist the urge against the Florida Panthers? I still don't expect him to play 20 minutes, but I'd be shocked if he doesn't play at least 17 or so.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I'm at. But I think if you can limit him on the PK, that's where you can probably shave off the most time.
It's going to be hard to judge his impact early on. And I think this is something, given the Canucks' struggles to break out, I think JT at times does a really good job of coming deep in the defensive zone to help his defenders with the breakout. I know Patterson, I've liked it at times, but I think he can do better, especially with his ability to transport the puck through the neutral zone. But, you know, you get Miller back into the lineup. You know, I think that's one area I'm looking for, especially with Hronek out of the lineup. Do you get Miller to stay close with his defenders in the defensive zone and try to get him to help with the breakout a little bit more? Because the Canucks, as we know, have had a really difficult time breaking the puck out of their own end without Quinn Hughes on the ice. So I think Miller helps on that front because, you know, he's really good at coming in deep to help his defenders on the breakout.
Yeah, and also what he brings with his speed, and Talk had mentioned this too today about the speed down the middle he provides. He is their best skater, especially most explosive skater down the middle on this team. And having his force does make a big difference. And the Canucks have struggled the last few games getting to the middle of the ice a lot, especially their centers getting there. I know Pedersen's tried and done his best, but you're not seeing it from other guys as consistently. That's where JT lives. I think JT's going to help in that regard too. So I know they're missing Hronek in a big way, but if you can't have better defensemen, the next best thing to have is better centers, because they can help your transition game almost as much as a decent defenseman if you have a high-end one.
Quickly in the Canucks Central roundup before Landon Ferraro joins us here on Canucks Central. It's Kevin Lankinen starting tonight for the Vancouver Canucks. He gets back in after Thatcher Demko played in his season debut the other night against St. Louis. So the expectation is, I guess early on, the Canucks aren't divulging their plan as far as how they're going to use their goaltenders. But maybe one game in, one game out, we'll see how this continues to develop.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to see Demko play maybe Saturday, against the Bruins. It wouldn't shock me, but he's playing for sure Monday if he's not playing. Saturday against the Bruins, against the Colorado Avalanche. So expect it to still be Lankinen getting the lion's share. But with how Demko played and how happy they were with his game, wouldn't shock me if he's back between the pipes on Saturday.
Miller is in. That means somebody's got to come out. It is going to be Atu Ratu. Eric Brännström comes out of the lineup. Desharnais will sit as well. Derek Forbert and Mark Friedman are into the lineup. So Max Sasson stays in, and Rick Tocchet did allude to how he's going to set his lines up today, because it was just an optional skate. They did not have the full group out for the morning, but Rick Tocchet was asked about it, and he essentially alluded to what we've talked about here on the show, Sat, as we were foreshadowing to this moment with Miller coming back in. It is going to be Sherwood going back with Pettersson and Brusk, and then you would have Miller with Besser. Höglander is going to get the first look next to those guys on their left wing and be the F1, try to get in there and forecheck for them, as Coach alluded to. You keep Suter with Joshua and Garland, and then your fourth line is going to be Teddy Bluger with Max Sasson and Danton Heinen.
Yeah, I like this forward group a lot better, and it's funny how one guy can kind of change things so significantly. And all of a sudden, your fourth line, I think having a couple guys who, and as much as Heinen has had his struggles, I do think it gives you a little bit more. You know, somebody texted in and said Ratu can win faceoffs, and yeah, he's won 56%. That's why I'm a little surprised that Sasson is still in.
Yeah.
But one thing that's clear is he doesn't trust Ratu yet, and in a big PK role in a position, because he's had some confusion.
We've seen him, we've seen him have struggles, like a lost faceoff, and then he misses his assignment. Next thing you know, the puck's in the back of your net.
Yeah, so that's kind of where the issue is as far as his game goes. And Sasson brings a bit more speed. Mm-hmm. I want to see him play a little more firm. Not to say he's been soft, but I want to see him a bit more firm, especially compared to where he was the other night. But I do think that gives you a better fourth line. I think that takes a little bit of pressure off having a couple of guys. But I think having Sherwood, getting somebody that can have speed, crash the net, and really play that F1 role with physicality too, alongside Pettersson and DeBrusk, I think will be a nice boost tonight.
So we'll see how it plays out. Florida Panthers, obviously a tough opponent. Defending Stanley Cup champs, they won 6 of their last 7, including 3 in a row as they roll into Vancouver. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here on the program. Coming up, Landon Ferraro is going to join us next on Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.